Welcome to the Fantasy Sports Collective podcast, episode 71. We're cooking. We're 4 weeks away from the NFL draft. We're in the heart of March Madness, and the NBA playoffs are just around the corner. So I'm going to touch on all those topics when we get to the flip side.
This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping now.
I'm going to start off with the biggest game, the March Madness tournament, which was a women's game, nonetheless. I never thought I would say that when I was growing up as a kid, but you had the defending champs, the LSU Tigers with Angel Reese and Kim Mulkey, and the villains, so to speak, taking on their opponent in last year's title game for a right to go back to the Final Four in the University of Iowa Hawkeyes, featuring Caitlin Clark. Really highly anticipated game. And just cut to the chase. Look, Caitlin Clark showed up. It looks like Angel Reese is definitely injured. So I'm not going to give her a pass per se, but she won last year. It's Caitlin Clark's year, at least back to the Final Four. But Caitlin Clark was spectacular. Dropped 40, double-digit assists. I think I ended up with 7 rebounds, a couple blocks, a couple steals. She was basically everywhere. So she scored about 45% of her team's points. And just really settled the pace, kept it going. Angel Reese had a great game too. We're talking almost 20 boards, I think 16 or 18 points, really strong effort as well. It's exciting to see how far women's college basketball has come. I remember growing up, Stanford won back-to-back titles, and I was a basketball player, and I actually got some opportunity to do some runs with Jennifer Azzi, former Olympic player. Got to guard her and directly play against her in some pickup games at Maples Pavilion, the Stanford home court. And at that time, look, fundamentally sound. Obviously, there's just a big gap in play style and physicality and athleticism. Looking at the game now, there's obviously a big shift and there's still a difference, but it's not as great as it used to be. And in fact, you watch Caitlin Clark, she's going to be able to score in a men's game easily from that distance. She's got Steph Curry range. It's exciting to watch. Fundamentals are there, crisp, quickness. It's just it's a different game. It's exciting. And you see it in the ratings. I think that Iowa-LSU game will end up being the far and away the most watched game of this cycle. And Caitlin Clark is just one of those rock star kind of carnival coming to town events. Apparently people are paying hundreds of dollars above face value just to get in to see her play. People are waiting out line to get in and watch her warm up. It reminds me of the height of the Steph Curry craze. So really cool stuff. I don't have a specific team. I guess I'd root for Stanford, although they got knocked out. But it's going to be fun to see how far Caitlin can take it and whether she can win the title this year and bring it home. Okay, let's talk a little bit of NBA. We're 2 weeks out. And I think we have a pretty good sense of what's what. The Celtics have locked up the one seed and a really good shot went in that kind of low 60s, maybe mid 60s range. They're 58-16 now. They've got exactly, 10 games, 64, 75. They've got 8 games left, actually. So if they can go 6-2, they'd finish out 64-18, which is an outstanding season. They're clearly going to get in the 60s, and they're the only team that will get in the 60s. I think the Thunder and the Nuggets, if they win out, win 59. If the Thunder win out, they get to 60. So unlikely either of them get to 60. So Celtics are the one seed. They're clearly the class of the East. They've been there for many years now with this core group since Jaylen Brown was a second-year player and Tatum was a rookie. So I think a 17-18 kind of time frame. They've been in the Eastern Conference Finals. They had one trip to the NBA Finals. So is this their year? I don't know. Could be. The rest of the teams in the East, I don't know. I guess Giannis and Lillard and Middleton, they get into the next stage. Very likely they've got a potential to do something interesting. They definitely have the horsepower and they've got the pedigree, but I'm not sure they're there. Cavs have been hotter recently, although they're 4-6 now in their last 10. And they've got a squad, but it doesn't look like they've got the team to take to the next level. And after that, Knicks are scrappy, good regular season team without Randall and Anobi. I just don't think they've got a shot. So that's the East. The West is a lot more wide open. You've got the Thunder and Nuggets battling for the one seed, and the Timberwolves are one game behind them. So they're all right there. They all look great. They're going to end up in the kind of mid to high 50s wins, maybe even 58, 59 for the team with the one seed probably. And the West top to bottom is just a much tougher. And you got the Spurs, who actually play hard every game, every game. And they've had some nice upsets. They're 4-6 in the last 10. They're the kind of one team. Them and the Trailblazers are really down there at the bottom. But there's still tough outs. And you get into the 11th seed. You got the Rockets, who are above 500. By the way, the Rockets are 38-36. And they're the 11th seed. In the East, they would be the 9th seed. And you've got teams that are going to be in the play-in with well under. Bulls are 9th seed at 36-39, and the Hawks are 10 at 34-40. So Western Conference is much, much more difficult. The 10th seed in the Western Conference is the Warriors right now at 40-34, and they've got a plus-minus of 2.2 or 2.3, which is pretty good. So point being is the West is much deeper, which kind of plays into the Celtics having going to be way in the 60s. They've just played a little bit softer schedule than the Thunder, Nuggets, Timberwolves have. And I think in the West, I'm not ready to anoint or I wouldn't put money down on Thunder or the Timberwolves yet. They're young teams. I think they're probably one more year and then like another piece, particularly the Thunder, away. But the Timberwolves, maybe. Nuggets, obviously reigning champs. They've got the team to do it. I think once playoff come, they're going to be a hard team to beat. They'd be my favorite. And I think I know the odds are heavily in favor of Nuggets, Celtics in the finals. But I wouldn't – look, I like the Clippers as a potential team. I like the Suns. And yes, call me a homer. I still like the Warriors in the playoffs if they can get through the gauntlet of the play-in and make sure they get in. They've got a two-game lead right now on the play-in with eight to go. So if they can get in, they can win any series. I honestly believe that. I think the Nuggets are a tough matchup for them. I don't love the Lakers as a matchup, and unfortunately that looks like they're going to play in the first play-in game. So that's going to be tough sledding for them. But we'll see. It's going to be an interesting close. We'll have to see how they finish out. Okay, last thing I wanted to cover today was who are my draft sleepers? And these are guys, some of these guys I'm going to name, by the way, are guys that could end up in the first round. But they're guys that are they're definitely coming off the board, five, six players in at their position or in that range. And guys, I'm really excited to see where they land because I think they're going to be better. I'll start off at tight end. I don't have a strong conviction at this position this year in particular. This year is a little bit less deep than in past seasons, but there's some good players out there. Brock Bowers is going to be somebody everyone talks about. I think he's solid, but that's not who I'm talking about. I really like Eric Aull. He's a guy who we had an ACL last year, played at Michigan and Iowa. He just is someone who's good size. He's 6'4", almost 6'5", 250. He's somebody I think who's got that Dalton Kincaid, but really good blocker, a move guy, can play both. And so he can be on the field a ton. So I really like him. And then Tip Raymond, who was at Illinois, was spectacular at the combine, very physical. He's 6'4", almost 6'5", 270, but showed a lot of athleticism at the combine. He's somebody who I think very likely could just be in the right situation. Reminds me a little bit of a Darnell Washington from last year. Darnell Washington, by the way, another guy. He's going to be a second-year player. Problem is he landed in Pittsburgh, and they're not a really pass-friendly offense, and they've got their passing tight end in Pat Freiermuth ahead of him. But Darnell Washington, top recruit, went to Georgia. In his limited time playing behind Brock Bowers, was really athletic, showed some amazing open field ability. And if he'd been in a different situation, could be an amazing pro player. Next, wide receiver. So these are two guys that were like number two guys on their own teams in college, but demonstrated both in the games this season and at the combine that they are special. And remind me, I'm not saying these guys are going to be Justin Jefferson, but Justin Jefferson-like, meaning they're playing behind bigger named, more hyped prospects in Brian Thomas Jr. at LSU, playing behind Malik Nabers, and Adonnell Mitchell playing in Georgia at first, where he wasn't a featured guy, and he was playing behind a bunch of other talent. They just spread it around. And then this past year behind Xavier Worthy at Texas. Both these guys look really good if you watch them play. They were very productive this past year. and there's a dog in both of them. And then they went to the combine and were really good. Thomas in particular, 6'3", 210. He ran a 4.340. His short shuttle was fast. His cone drill. Mitchell, again, very strong physically, broad jump, vertical. These guys both, and they, by the way, they could both slip into the first round. I think Thomas, actually, BTJ is what the LSU Tiger fans call him. I think he slips into the first round. He's got too much size, skill. Like Justin Jefferson, quite frankly, there's productivity, all the stats, the combine, all laid out there. Okay, this guy's a first rounder. The one thing I would say, though, this draft is so deep at receiver and so many good guys. Xavier Worthy, Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze, Marvin Harrison Jr. You can even go down the line. You've got like Troy Franklin. There's a ton of really good talent coming out. So you could see a Mitchell and a Thomas. I think Mitchell could fall into the second round. I think Thomas is first round, but late first round. But both these guys I look to as guys who could be next level, really stars, wide receiver ones, and guys like we look back and like, how do we miss on those? Or not miss, but how do they fall below that threshold? And by the way, you've heard me say this on the pod before, but I look at a guy like Drake London. It's a great example of this. Very talented player. I like him. In this draft, I think he slips to like the late second, maybe even third round. That's how deep this receiver class is. It's incredible. So anyhow, like Donald Mitchell and Brian Thomas Jr., can't say enough about them. Clearly, at running back, I haven't done enough looking here. And quite frankly, I don't think this class is very good. It's not terrible, but it's not great. The one guy I'll call out, and I think this guy is going to be one of the top four or five running backs selected, but I think he's going to be more like late second, probably third, potentially even fourth, given the amount of skill position talent in this draft, is Trey Benson. Again, he's not much of a sleeper in the sense he's going to be drafted in the top three or four running backs, but he's one of the few guys I look at, even at the top of the class, who has the ability to play all three downs, and he has the potential to be a difference maker. I like Jonathan Brooks. He's more of a plotter who can also catch, but he's not a super dynamic player. And I like Blake Corum, but Blake Corum's more of a between the tackles, not spectacular game breaker, but a guy that you can give a lot of carries to. Wouldn't actually surprise me to see Jim Harbaugh try to pick him in the second or third round to pair him with a Gus Edwards and really give him his 1-2 kind of thunder power kind of backfield, if you will. But Benson is a guy who can play all three downs. He's going to fall in a situation where on paper, it looks like he's a committee guy, but I think he has the potential to be a lot more than that, particularly in fantasy. He could be a guy that surprises next year. So if he gets selected in Dallas or one of the LA teams, I would pounce on him in drafts. And then at quarterback, this is a great quarterback class. There almost definitely is going to be four quarterbacks in the first round. I would be surprised if there's not five. And one of the guys I'm going to mention would be the fifth. And there's an outside chance there's six guys selected in the first round, and that would be the other guy I've got. So let me just say, two guys are Michael Penix Jr., played at University of Washington, but started his career at Indiana. And the second one is Bo Nix, at University of Oregon, but started his career at Auburn. Both these guys played a ton of college football. They've been really productive, even at Auburn for Bo Nix and at Indiana and Penix. In Nick's case, he was just in a situation where they didn't run a really productive offense. He never was surrounded by top-end talent, and he played tough SEC schedule at Auburn. And they transferred to Oregon, and he's been lights out the last 2 years in Oregon, really productive. And just you can see his strength. He's very knowledgeable about the system. He's mobile. He can hit. He can really make all the throws. It's not spectacular at any one level. But he's a guy that he maybe is a first round pick. I think he probably drops the second, but he's a guy because he's played so much football. I think he's got a chance to be a starter in this league and play a long time. He's built up that confidence. He can do it. Is he special? Probably not, but he's a guy I like, especially in super flex leagues with dynasty. He's a guy I think maybe not starts next year, but I think he's in a really good position to eventually get starts and then prove himself and keep the job. And then Michael Penix. Look, he's a guy who's got a ton of physical talent, that in the combine, his pro day. He's got a great arm. Really, the only knock on him, from my vantage point, is the multiple ACL injuries where he's missed quite a bit of time. So he's an older guy. He's 24, and Nix is older as well. But I'm not going to knock him. I don't think in the NBA, when you're scouting and trying to project, it's one thing. The NFL, this is the toughest position to play. And having that experience, having that confidence, have led a team to the national championship game, had an incredible year. It really builds up who he is, and it demonstrates how much of a leader he can be. He's been lights out in the kind of combine, pro day, postseason gauntlet you run. He's showed his athleticism with a 4.6 40. He's got an incredible arm, and you saw that on display. And so I really like Penix as a guy who will end up being underrated in this draft. I think he's going to be a first rounder, by the way. I'd be surprised if he doesn't go late first round, like between pick 20 and 32. And I think we're going to look back, maybe Lamar Jackson. I think we're going to look back in 2 or 3 years, and not to say Penix is a MVP, but I think we're going to look back and say that's actually, he was one of the best quarterbacks from this draft. I'm not going to say he's going to be better than Caleb Williams or Jaden Daniels, but I think he is better than Drake May, who I think there's a high bust potential there. And I think he's definitely better than Jay McCarthy. And I like him better than Bo Nix. Bo Nix's floor is very high. I don't think his ceiling's crazy high. So his floor is much higher than Jim McCarthy and Drake May, and maybe even Jaden Daniels, but his ceiling isn't nearly as high. I think Penix has a really high ceiling, and I think his floor, barring injury, is really high as well. So I like both those guys. I'll talk more about this as we get closer to the draft. I'll dig deeper into NBA fantasy kind of postseason awards coming up. But on that note, I hope everyone has an awesome week. Enjoy the first week and kickoff of April. And come back at you shortly as we get closer to the NBA playoffs. Take care. Bye-bye.
Before we leave, let me tell y'all a little something. Uptown, funk you up. Uptown, funk you up. Uptown, funk you up. Uptown, funk you up. I said, up.